I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Morro Bay State Park. Right now we're with Chad Jackson, archaeologist for the state parks. Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. You have a passion and a mission. You're deeply immersed in things that aren't anymore. You're looking back in the lens of time. Tell us about what you're most fascinated with and passionate about.
Thanks for the opportunity here, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a sucker for nostalgia, and just becoming an archaeologist a couple decades ago and just pursuing this career has just been fascinated by human history of all different genres, really. But I've become a specialist in Central Californian archaeology as it pertains to the Native American.
You study the Chumash villages.
I work with Chumash people, Northern Chumash and Salinan people who traditionally lived all throughout San Luis Obispo County into Monterey County.
So right here in Morro Bay, there was a village, right?
There were many villages throughout this stretch. Morro Bay was definitely a place where there were more than one village over a long span of history.
Any estimate to the population at its optimum?
The populations were not as large as some people would like to believe, as we know archaeological research and some of the historic documentation. But in terms of right at the largest village in Morro Bay, you know, a couple hundred people max, they really employed a little bit more of a spread out settlement pattern where they weren't always all concentrated into one area, sort of allowed them to utilize so many different great areas within a general vicinity.
With an abundance of sea life here, it follows that they were very much into the aquaculture and going out on their little kayaks.
Yeah, they had a lot of different technologies that they would employ. They built tule raft boats, and those have been known to have been used by the Chumash and all the other coastal tribes that goes so far back, probably all the way back in, 10, 15,000 years ago.
Any agrarian evidence?
They didn't practice agriculture in this sense, but
so they were foragers.
Yeah, but they also manipulated the plants in many different ways and promoted the growth of desirable edibles and other plants that they would use for tools and material through a variety of different methods.
And they had a pharmacopoeia, didn't they?
Oh, they did. Absolutely. Yeah, one of the reasons why traditional agriculture wasn't necessary for them. They undoubtedly knew about agriculture from the other neighboring groups to the south and the east, and they probably just didn't want to deal with all the pains and risks of agriculture, especially in an area where, as we're all experiencing now, droughts were always on the horizon and the threat of a drought and that risk of losing your entire crop being dependent upon agriculture probably didn't seem wise. And they were most definitely, this area of the greater United States of America, is North America in general, was home to these people for so many millennia that they just had a system that worked and they stayed here. Their cultures didn't really move beyond their traditional homelands. We know through archaeological evidence and other things that they were here for 10,000 years or more, the same spot.
I know in my time in national parks in New Mexico, for example, native site, there is physical evidence of trade goods from all the way down from Central America, Costa Rica. Has there been any primary evidence of trade goods here from tribes beyond the Sierras?
There has been evidence of Chumash beads found very far from here, as far as vice versa coming in. None that I'm aware of, but I do know of coastal shell ornaments being found in Mexico and other places beyond that they believe to have derived from more so the Santa Barbara Channel area. I most definitely believe that trade networks that emanated from Central California reached far, far places, especially with such valuable resources that they had at their disposal here, like the abalones and the sea otter pelts and some of the asphaltum that the Northern Chumash, where they refer to as PIS, P-I-S, and that material was like the gold for material and utilitarian usage.
Binding agent.
Yeah, it was like having glue or resin. We have an abundance of that here. Very valuable trade item for sure.
Have you been to and studied Painted Cave in Santa Barbara County?
I haven't done any research really into the Painted Cave that you're referring to, mm-hmm. but the more widespread tradition of cave painting and the pictographs that we have is very rich and very sacred to the people. So, you know, I definitely don't promote going out and looking for that stuff to the public.
Painted rock is fenced off now, isn't it?
Yeah, the graffiti that you see at some of those sites is just such a bummer. And mm-hmm. a lot of the archaeologists we work with, you know, tribes and the descendants of these traditions and cultures just to, you know, just try to protect and help manage so many amazing places. That's really our goal here mm-hmm. at State Parks. And
talk to us about your mission to share and interpretive displays and whatnot on the Central Coast.
Yeah, I work intimately with our interpretive staff because we have a separate group, task for doing all of the public outreach and interpretive stuff that is handled by our interpretive staff. And they do a great job, and I love working with them. And we're always bringing in the tribal groups so those people can represent and speak on behalf of the cultures and the native people themselves, and just sort of serving as an expertise in the archaeology and some of the other natural sciences, and being able to do the research myself, but always try to serve, you know, the community, both the native community, and helping them put out their voice and helping them to educate the public, kind of serve to help to craft the narrative that has been, in many cases, inaccurate or just not very well representative of those native communities. We say at State Parks we kind of have a goal now to be in the spirit of truth and healing for our history here in California, and being just acknowledge, respect, and keep moving forward. And yeah, that's something that definitely motivates me every day mm-hmm. in my job, and I love it.
Within the state park system on the Central Coast, where would somebody go to see interpretive displays of the native peoples?
Here at Morro Bay State Park at the Morro Bay Natural History Museum, where we are now, this is a great place. All the campgrounds should have interpretive signage. Pismo State Parks down there, they have a great interpretive program. Really, all of the state parks have a lot of time, effort, and funding to put forth better interpretive projects. And so wherever you may live, you know, but here in San Luis Obispo County, we're continuing to produce more and trying to improve our interpretive signage. But, you know, I would always start here at the museum and Montana de Oro and all along the trails. So most of the state parks here are frequented by locals who just go hiking. They're usually met with some sort of interpretive signage at the trailhead or somewhere nearby. So
archaeology has been evolving. And one of the game changers, as you well know, is less intrusive archaeological digs mm-hmm. using ground-penetrating radar, et cetera. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, one of the goals to protect these sites, you know, kind of carries with it that conflict of doing archaeological excavations, you know, can be destructive. You know, here in the U.S., we followed the sort of paradigm shift towards cultural resources management. It began in the 70s, and the goal of it was to go out and do archaeological research and excavations at places that were going to be destroyed by development. And so
you had that one last chance.
Yeah, and well, now, you know, there's ongoing development, so there's always going to be development, you know, progress mm-hmm. is going to, and our goal is to try to avoid special places and not develop those places, but the inevitability of progress, mm-hmm. you know, whether it be something, if it's for public safety, you know, that might take precedent, you know, this is necessary. We need to build this, you know, there's a Native American site here, and so excavations would be warranted.
But there are mandates before the developers can excavate.
Absolutely,
they
yeah.
have to give archaeologists the opportunity to go in and do yeah. one last dig.
Yeah, and even more so, just bringing in the Native American groups themselves, so they have a voice and they can be part of the process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to be able to do archaeological research without extensive excavating is part of that evolution that you're referring to. And using technology and using other non-intrusive forms of acquiring data is a big shift, and it's highly dependent on that technology, because we have you know, crazy technology nowadays. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to do a lot of things without having to, you know, excavate.
Yeah, a couple archaeologists were telling me the plus of doing an archaeological dig is you get to find a bunch of cool stuff. Mm. The downside is once you've dug, you've defiled that site forever. It's been disturbed and can never be viewed in that native virginal in situ.
Yeah, archaeological resources are essentially non-renewable if you think of them in the light of a resource. And again, you know, both through new requirements, you know, through laws that have passed, and also just the involvement of the tribes and the modern day descendants and how they want to see their heritage managed is part of that process. And if, you know, there's a place that they don't believe should be excavated, then, you know, you listen to them and you try to work towards, you know, what's the purpose of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And we're just, you know, trying to learn about the past is a goal of archaeology, and trying to just understand more about the place that we live is great. But yeah, you don't rush into anything, and it's definitely not like it was back in the olden days where people would just come in and start digging to look for treasures. You know, we don't do that. Yeah, so there's a lot of players involved, and I think the public, in some cases, they don't understand, you know, how things are done. And part of that education and interpretive work that we do, and also a lot of the work that the tribes do, is just to, you know, help everybody learn.
To learn more about your world, the California State Parks and its mission relative to archaeological sites, do you have a website? Where would somebody go?
I would direct people towards our local Native American tribes. If they have sites online to look, I would direct them there. We do have some videos and other educational resources online through our state parks hubs, and also through the Central Coast Parks Association. They're a great resource for the public.
Very
so
cool.
They can go through there.
Chad Jackson, California State Parks, thank you for spending the morning with us. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Morro Bay State Park in Morro Bay, California. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.